The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Klapo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish, along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. I'm Dr. Josh Klapo, and we have another incredibly deep, enthralling, strange, all over the place, but meaningful segment for you today. Today, I came up with this. I had so much fun with this. You know, Alex, this is my favorite part. I told you this is my favorite part. I know we get really important things, but coming up with the song is just the best one. So today it's don't let your company become, hang on, a teenage wasteland. Oh, is that just great? Is that just...
I love it. I love it, man.
I have so much fun, even if it doesn't match the topic, it gets me back into the lyrics. And the other thing that's interesting is sometimes I read these lyrics and the title is great, but the lyrics actually have nothing to do with what I'm using the title for. But, you know, we got to stretch it a little bit. I hear all the time in the work that I do about toxic cultures. I hear that. I hear toxic people. I hear toxic business practices. You know, I hear the word toxic and toxicity. And as a psychologist who works with organizations, you know, I'm always looking, okay, where is that coming from? Who is it, et cetera? But one of the things that you and I were talking about kind of before we started this, that toxicity can clearly be people, but it can also be processes and products. It can be, to dig it out, it can be bugs in a system. And you as the president of a software company, I mean, obviously you're seeing toxic, bad chips in all kinds of different ways. So talk to us a little bit about when you hear the idea of toxic, what are you thinking about broadly as you're either going into an organization or trying to figure out what an organization needs?
Well, you know, it's a term, you're right. It's a term that's really come into vogue, I guess, in the last several years. You would very rarely hear that term, well, there's a toxic culture or that person is toxic to the organization. But I think you're right. I mean, it is something that can be, it can be people, it can be cultures, it can be processes, it can be a wide variety of things. But I think the thing that they all have in common is this idea of that they're truly toxic, they're poisonous to the organization. And that poison slows things down, it demotivates people, and it spreads a lot of times. So you can see situations where, you know, maybe you've got a toxic culture, a work culture, and we hear about this all the time, right? You hear these news reports of, well, you know, this CEO has created a toxic culture. Mm-hmm. We saw it in, we've seen it in a lot. There was that one CEO, I can't remember what the company did, but it was a few months ago. He got on this Zoom call and basically said, you know, everybody on this call, you're fired. We're getting rid of you. You didn't do any work for us anyway. You were lazy and blah, 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 blah. And that got out to the rest of the company. And man, it was toxic. It spread like wildfire. Like, who is this guy standing up and saying all these things to hundreds of people and doing these mass firings and everything else, right? So that was a toxic thing for that CEO to do. And it spread to the rest of the organization. The rest of the organization said, wow, do I even want to be working at a company that would go out and do something like this and a leader that would go out and treat people that way? And I think that's, you know, that's the essence of it, though, is that whether it's a person or a culture or a process, it's toxic because, A, it slows everything down. It demotivates people. And it can also spread within the organization. And if you let it spread too far, particularly in a job market like we have today, which is an incredibly competitive job market for people that are hiring, you can end up in a situation where so many people leave that you've jeopardized the business itself. And so I think that's one of the lessons I've learned about toxicity in general, is that you have to manage it, and you've got to make sure that if you see the organization moving in that direction, you have to take some very decisive action to prevent the spread to every part of your organization. Because again, that can be an existential threat to a lot of organizations and a lot of companies.
Okay, so you and I have both seen this. And it's particularly difficult when it's happening at the top, and we'll have time to get down to sort of mid-level and bottom. But we have a leader who maybe they've done some things very effectively, but their style is toxic, or their words or their practices. But then everybody who works with them, it's the yes people, right? Because they're focused on, you know, keeping their job. And they almost, you know, it's they come to believe, it has a cult-like nature to it. They come to believe that this great leader, what they're doing may not feel right, but both for their own survival and maybe a little bit of questioning, they get on board. And the toxicity goes from, it doesn't just spread from the leader. It's I hate to use this, it's like a virus. Right. And people are catching the virus, and lots of people know that they're ill with this, but nobody is saying anything because they don't want to, quote, die. And to your point, and I don't know how this comes in until, you know, the you know what really hits the fan is who is going to step up, you know, because particularly in a hierarchy, nobody wants to lose their job. Nobody wants to, you know, go against what leadership says. I mean, I see it all the time, you know, days, weeks, months, years, nobody saying anything because they feel like either A, this person knows what they're doing, they have a great resume, or B, you know, I got to preserve myself. So how do you stop toxicity in a system, both at the people level, and then I'll give you, pivoted for an easier one, you know, from a more, let's do it for also from a more software processy standpoint, because I feel like that second one's probably a little bit easier, at least I think, but how do you do it from a people standpoint, but then also how do you do it from a sort of infrastructure standpoint?
Yeah, well, I'll point out that because you spawned a thought there in my head, and I was just reflecting as you were talking on some of the.
That's because I'm a psychologist. That's my job.
You're good at that, man. You plant these little ideas in people's heads without them realizing it, right? But like it's really bad when you have a toxic board of directors.
Oh yeah,
and I've worked for companies that had some of the most dysfunctional. Dare I say toxic boards out there. And so when you have a board that's toxic, man, that is really hard to fix. I mean, almost impossible to fix. And these companies went on for years and years and years. They kept moving forward just based on the momentum of the success that they had in the past. But when it came down to it, the board was toxic. And then that just spread from the top all the way down. So I don't know how you fix that one in particular. I'm still struggling with what to do other than a shareholder revolt or something. But I think the way I've seen to sort of fix some of the organizational and people level toxicity, there's really sort of three strategies. One of them is you've got to be very explicit about what your core values are as a company. And you've got to make sure that that's infused into your culture. And so you've got to be able to decide, look, here's what we stand for. Here are the things that we will never stand for, that we will never accept, that are unacceptable to the company. And be very explicit about communicating those to everyone in the organization, right? You can call them guiding principles or core values or what have you. And at Adaptogen, we spend a lot of time talking about this stuff. We have weekly all hands calls that we started during the pandemic, right when the pandemic hit. And we just continued to do them every single week. And every single week, then people are sick of me showing these slides, but I'll put up a couple of slides that say, look, here are the core values. Here's what we stand for. So it has to be this sort of relentless communication. It can't be a one-time or we'll review these things once a year or whatever. It's got to be something that's pervasive. And when you have those core values, then you can look at your organization. You can look at individuals that may be you know, you think are toxic to the organization, and you say, are they living up to these core values, or to what extent are they living up to these core values, or are they moving away from these core values? So I think that's one way of sort of at least, you know, it's not empirically measurable in the sense that we can put a number around it, but we can look at it from a qualitative standpoint. And that gives us sort of the guidelines for who is living up to those cultural ideas. So I think that's one big piece to it.
Well, let's pause for a second, because I want to ask you this. One of the things that Brené Brown talks about a lot in Daring Leadership, or Dare to Lead, is this idea of living into your values. Again, as we've talked about in other segments, you don't have to be the CEO to be a leader. Okay. So the idea of living into your values, and you just made a really, you made a really important point that I think a lot of companies, run out of time. It falls off their radar. This idea of relentlessly checking, you know, are we living our company values? What happens? And this is just for us to riff on. What happens when the leader who may have started these company values and everybody bought in goes astray? I mean, I end up seeing them as clients because they've gone astray. And either they, ideally they recognize that they've gone astray, but when they don't recognize that they've gone astray from the very thing that they're trying to put into place to prevent toxicity. I mean, is that when the board comes in, or is that when the
ideally
is it? Yeah. Or let me ask you this. Do you see this, you know, the person who is brave enough, the, you know, maybe it's the COO, CTO, somebody who is up there who says, hey, you're straying. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that in your career, and what the fallout is of that.
Well, I mean, I have, and you know, the fallout usually in most big organizations is it's not good, right? Know, for the people that are calling out the CEO or the board or whomever, right? It doesn't.
But it should be okay.
Right? Well, it should be, yeah. It usually doesn't end well.
No, you're right.
But I think again, it comes back to those core values, right? And I think one of the core values of every organization that's out there should be this idea that people should feel free to speak their mind on topics, even when it's a situation where it's different than what the leadership of the company believes or says. And so being able to stand up and say those things without fear of retribution, to call people out and say, hey, these are the core values, and I don't think you're living up to those core values, and having a very candid conversation about that, I think that's a sign of a really mature organization. And really mature leaders. And I got to tell you, I mean, one of the core values we have at Adaptogen is this idea of accountability. And accountability isn't just from the top down. Accountability goes in every direction. It goes up, it goes laterally. And, you know, what I encourage people to do is that if I'm not living up to one of those core values, or I say that I'm going to do something and I don't do it, hold me accountable, right? Send me an email saying, hey man, you said you were going to do this and you didn't do it. And that's not part of our core values. Or the direction that we're going, I don't think is part of the core values of the company. And you'd be amazed at the number of people that do it. Right? I get notes all the time saying, hey, where is this thing, man? You said you were going to do it last week and I still don't have it and blah, 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 blah. And you know, one of the things I do when people send me an email like that, or they call me or whatever, is the first thing I do is say to them, thanks for holding me accountable. Because this isn't a top-down accountability. This is peer-to-peer accountability. This goes up the chain as well, if you will. So I think one of the things you got to do is build a culture where people are comfortable pointing those things out. And you know, the really neat thing is that when you do it and it starts to really take hold, a couple of really interesting things happen. One of them is that people that would never say anything on team calls or whatever, all of a sudden you can't shut them up. I mean, it's like Chatty Cathy. They built up all this stuff they wanted to say for years and years and years, and now it all comes out. And it's great. You know, it's great to see that happen within an organization, to see people that were maybe afraid to say anything come out and just really start talking and talking and talking about, here's what I think we ought to do. So I think you know you've reached that point when you see people that were previously very, very quiet all of a sudden become very, very vocal about things. That's one of the points I think you know that you've built a culture where people can call out the leadership team, and they can call them out and say, hey, look, man, you're not doing it. You spew all this stuff every week about the core values and everything else, but you don't, you're not living up to them. That to me is a sign of a really, really mature organization. And mature leaders.
All right, let me push back on you though. I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you. But one of the things that I see is, So that we set this precedent where we say, look, everybody needs to be held accountable and no idea is a bad idea. And if I'm not sort of keeping up my end of the deal, whether I'm at the highest level executive or lowest, we need to hold each other accountable. And to me, there is a big difference between holding each other accountable. And I've heard this in companies I've worked with and companies I've worked for. And then you use the word, and I know you didn't mean calling out, because one of the things that I see that breeds toxicity is when you open the door and say, we're going to hold each other accountable. It's a part of what this organization is. And I want you, whoever you are, to be able to call me out when I don't live up to what I say that I'm going to. I see it opening the door for real inappropriate behavior. You know, hey, you never did this, or what about this? You said you were going to get this done. What is the role of somebody or the company or leadership in, if you will, teaching people how to hold each other accountable in the right way? I think about the mess that is academics that you and I both came from. But at the same time, if you think about sort of the way people present papers and all that kind of stuff, there's a decorum to it, right? There's a set of rules that say, if you're going to call somebody out, here's what you call them out based on. What are your thoughts on that? Because I get nervous, and I think leaders get nervous that they're going to open the floodgates for inappropriate behavior.
You have to walk a fine line there. You're right. You definitely calling people out or whatever, it's got to be done in a very respectful way. It's got to be done in a very objective way. And at the end of the day, I mean, it has to be something that isn't viewed necessarily as a personal conflict. Being able to stand up and say, look, I don't think this is the right direction, or I don't think that, this person is holding up their end of the deal here. You have to do it in a very respectful way. And I think it all comes down to that. And, you know, the interesting thing that you see out there is that you're right. You end up in situations where that type of if you let it go wrong, if you just make it a big free for all, it ends up with just a bunch of finger pointing, and it creates divisions within organizations. So you always have to make sure that you also promote one of those core values is doing things with respect and integrity. Just because someone has a different idea, or just because someone didn't do what they said they were going to do, that doesn't make them a bad person. And that's something I think just culturally, at least in the U.S., I think a lot of people have forgotten. Our politicians have forgotten that. The news media seems to have forgotten that in a lot of cases, that, you know, you can have differences of opinion, you can have different ideas, and still treat people with respect and value their ideas, even if they're different than your own. Being able to value other people's ideas, maybe they're coming at the world from a different perspective, and maybe I need to open my mind up to the different perspective that's being brought to the table, even though maybe today I disagree with it. So I think it's a balance you have to strike. And when you brought up academia, and I think academia is a really interesting one, because yes, there is a lot of sort of protocol and decorum for doing those sorts of things. But, you know, you get into a lot of these academic organizations. And I remember my dissertation advisor, when I was doing my doctorate, he said this to me. I said, you know, maybe someday I'd like to go into academia and teach and do research and whatnot. And he said, no, it's a great idea. You know, that's kind of why we designed this program. But he said, you know, you have to be a little bit careful because academics, they don't stab you in the back. They stab you in the front. it's legit. It's real. So you can end up with a toxic culture there as well.
Oh yeah.
Where people are, cause I see that happen a lot, right? You end up with a toxic culture because people are valuing their own individual success and contributions far more highly than they value what the company is doing or what the organization is doing. So they put themselves first, which I think, you know, that's just part of human nature, I think. But being able to look at it and put the company first or the organization first and your own desires and needs second to those, that's another great characteristic to be able to develop within an organization is that, look, if we succeed as an organization or a company, then we all succeed. So don't just look at it as what can I do just to maximize my status or my place in the organization. But what can I do to drive the entire organization forward? And again, that becomes one of those leadership characteristics that you look at when you're hiring people and when you're promoting people and all that. We talked about it in our previous episode. That type of characteristic is really, really important. The ability to not put oneself first, but put the higher good first is important in a lot of companies.
So let's pivot just a little bit on this. So we're talking about, you know, we're talking about people and toxicity and kind of how over time it can bring a company down to a wasteland. And as you were talking, I was thinking, okay, so on the technology side or on the processy side, we have QA teams, right? We have sort of systems and people looking at those systems to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do and they're doing it in an efficient way. But I know from the core business that you all do, a lot of times you're coming in to help lift legacy systems. Do you see organizations that are running, if you will, on toxic systems that it's, I guess it's like a slow death, right? It's not killing them. It's not killing them instantly. It's not bringing them down, but you come in and you're basically going, okay, if you all keep going this way, the way your system's running, it's going to run your company down into the ground. We need to remove the toxicity of the process or the system by using our technology.
Yeah, well, we don't say that to actual prospects. We don't say, hey, man, your systems are toxic.
I know, but I'm saying like internally you're seeing it. And so now you craft it into an appropriate sales delivery.
Yeah, I know we do. But to your point, yes, you see that happen all the time. You see, when we go out and we work with our customers and our prospects on initiatives, it's all around helping them become more adaptable to the changing market conditions that are around them and the changing world that we live in. And that pace of change, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, that pace of change is just it's getting faster and faster every single day, every single week, every single year. So you do see very, very toxic processes. Like I've worked for companies that, and the reason the processes were toxic was not because the processes themselves were bad or the processes themselves were ill-conceived. They were just ill-conceived for a new world that they were entering into. So for instance, you know, I worked for a big software company and we bought another software company who also made a large amount of their revenue off of hardware. And these guys just didn't know what to do with hardware because it wasn't like $1 million servers. It was like $5,000, pieces of hardware. And so they had this process that said everything has to go through a central, when you're going to ship something to a customer that bought it, it all has to go through this central distribution center in Germany. And that worked really well for the other hardware products that they sold because they were these multi-million-dollar hardware products. So you could ship them there, test them out, do whatever you need to do and ship them off to customers. the shipping fees weren't that big of a deal. But when you're dealing with $3,000 or $4,000 pieces of hardware, now you're having to ship them where they're manufactured over in Malaysia, I think it was, to Germany, and then back to Asia Pacific. The shipping costs basically destroyed all the profit. And so it was an incredibly toxic process. It did not work for the type of business model of the company that they'd acquired. And so, but the problem was, is that they didn't have the flexibility. They didn't have the insight, if you will, to go change that process, to adapt the process to say, yeah, this is really dumb. This is basically destroying our profit margins on every one of these things we ship. We need to do something about it. And so again, it wasn't so much the process that was toxic. It was the inability to adapt to a new world. That was what created the toxicity. And it was really demotivating for people, right? You would go look at your numbers, your profitability numbers, and basically say, there's no way for me to get to my profit targets if all my profit's getting eaten up by this thing, but nobody up above cared, right? And they were like, yeah, too bad, figure it out. So that can create a lot of dissension. Just one process that you can't rethink. But the heart of it, I think, is the inability to adapt your processes and to adapt what you're doing as the world changes. And so that's what we spend a lot of time doing with our customers, is helping them adapt those systems and those processes to kind of enter into this more modern, adaptable, flexible, changing world that's out there. And then you also see, you know, when we go out on sales calls a lot of times, what you'll see is we'll go through a big process with the prospect. We'll talk to them, we'll do proof of concept, so on and so forth. But what we find out along the way is that they have a toxic culture in the sense that no one ever makes decisions, right? They talk a lot, you know, and you see this in a lot of companies, right? They sit around and talk a lot about new ideas and whatnot, but at the end of the day, they don't ever make any decisions. And that's the most frustrating type of culture to deal with. If you're trying to sell something to somebody, is that person that just cannot make a decision. They're just incapable of pulling the trigger on something. And so that's, you know, you see that a lot as well.
Okay, I'll give you my Dr. Josh's corporate tip for this. Cause I'm laughing because I live it, you live it, we see it. And I always tell people that when you leave a meeting or an interaction of any kind in an organization, any kind, I don't care whether you're talking to your colleague or the CEO, it's a brainstorming session or it's a tactical, I always say you should never walk out of that meeting without knowing exactly whose court the ball is in. For sure. And I say that, Alex, because, like, you know, sometimes you're right. You can't make a decision in the moment right there. There needs to be other things that have to be done. But I don't know about you, but I see a whole lot of when it gets up, well, you know, that's a great idea. Let's go. We're going to go back and chew on it or circle up and we'll powwow and we'll blah, blah, blah. But it never has this kind of, where are we at, even if we don't have an answer? So I don't know if you see that, but I always give that recommendation is know for sure. I mean, I know we have action items and next steps, but like don't walk out of a meeting until you know whose court the ball is in. And if it's just floating in the air, then that's not acceptable.
Yeah, we see that all the time. I mean, like almost every day, something like that will happen. Honestly, it's amazing. You'll get to the end of the meeting or you'll get to the end of the interaction. Yeah. And nobody knows really where are we going? Where is this thing headed? Right. Yeah. You take some action items. Well, okay. You know, so-and-so will go off and do some research on this, but there's, you know, there's two things that I see there. One is there's just no sense of urgency to get things done. Mm-hmm. And so building in and an adaptogen, we call it a relentless sense of urgency, because you can have a sense of urgency in a short period of time. You know, if my house catches fire, I can have a short-term sense of urgency to get me and my family and the dog out of the house, right? It's how do you sustain that sense of urgency? How do you keep that going? And when people have a sense of urgency about things, there's less time to sit around and create toxic cultures or toxic processes or what have you. And the toxic people really come to light very quickly. within the organization. So I think that's one piece of it. And then there's the other piece of it that there's one of our core values, which is this idea of extreme ownership. Mm-hmm. And that means, look, you're not just responsible for your stuff. You're responsible for making sure that everything that touches your stuff gets done as well. So you can't say, well, my part of the process was I did this and then I handed it off to marketing and, you know, I never heard back from them. Well, did you call them? Did you go knock on their door and say, hey, man, where is this out and hold them accountable for it? Well, no, I was just, you know, it's not my job to do that. It's like, no, it is your job to do that. So I think having these core values is critical to avoid building up this dissension, these conflicts that can happen. Everybody needs to be on the same page and understand, here's what we stand for. Here are the core guiding principles of the company. And if you're not living up to those and you're not executing on those, maybe you're not a good fit for the company. And a lot of times that happens. But you're right, if you don't do that, you really do end up with a teenage wasteland. You end up with a bunch of very immature people that are pointing fingers at one another and everything else, and it just devolves into chaos. And I've seen it happen over and over and over again in organizations. So there's no magic bullet to this. There's no magic way to fix it. But if you build a strong foundation of what you stand for, what you're really trying to accomplish as an organization, and how, and the things that you will drive forward with and things you won't accept, then you can set the expectation with everyone, whether you're hiring people, you're promoting people, you're moving people around, they all understand what that baseline is.
Good stuff, Dr. Hubelein. Listen, for everyone listening, he just showed you how to prevent a teenage wasteland in your organization. And nobody wants to hear a bunch of teenagers whining and been complaining and pointing fingers. And it isn't easy, but it can be done. We've seen it. We've seen it in successful organizations. And this is why we do this kind of show, is to get into the nasty, toxic part of an organization that hopefully can clean it up and make it more functioning and make it thrive, not just adapt. Adapt and thrive versus perishing. That's all the time we've got for this episode of Adapt or Perish. Make sure that you stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, because that's where you're going to hear the next episode of Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.